Recording in progress.
But seriously, I was having this conversation. Why the dinner conversation is in there is because I never know what to make for dinner. And I'm the only one that thinks about this stuff in my house. And what? It drives me insane. So by day three, like Wednesday, I'm like, what do you want to eat? Because I don't know what to make.
Yeah.
Because I'm just tired of coming up with stuff. Because we try to eat healthy in this house.
What do you usually make? Like, what's your first go-to?
I don't have a first go-to because I get really bored.
So, yeah, like today, it's Monday. Like,
today,
what are
we having
today?
Breakfast for dinner because we have a lot going on today.
What does breakfast include? Is that cereal? Is that poor man's breakfast? Or is it like pancakes?
Okay. It's like pancakes. Big, like, think big breakfast from McDonald's.
Okay. Hey, like I was a cereal for breakfast kid. I ain't mad at it.
I mean, we do that sometimes when I'm just too overloaded or something, but my wife can barely boil an egg. So
really?
How oh my God, she's survived? The worst. She used to microwave chicken breast when I met her in the microwave.
She's alive?
I know.
Are you sure you're not just married to her ghost?
It's so bizarre. Ghost? Isn't that disgusting?
She went from raw chicken to cooked chicken in the microwave. Stop. Somebody, call the police. Someone needs to put the FBI on
this. It's so gross. I tell that story all the time because it was like 10, 11 years ago. But it is the funniest story to me because when I saw her do it, I was like, what?
Sat by and saw
So this? I had just had surgery and she was supposed to be making me dinner. And I was like, what are you doing? Please stop everything that you're doing right now.
On your surgical deathbed and was like, you know what's going to send her right over the edge? You know what's going to make this
literal nail
in the coffin?
I was on the couch and like hopped off the couch. I was like throwing myself at her body like, what are you doing?
She was probably like, what are you talking?
This is so normal. And I was like, that is the grossest thing I've ever seen. And please don't ever do that again. You're going to die.
If for any reason y'all ended up on like Dateline and they were like, they don't know what happened. They were poisoned. I'd be like, no, Tammy put chicken in the microwave. Y'all are crazy. They weren't poisoned. And that's how the episode would go. That's the end. And they'd say, wrap it up.
So gross.
Welcome to Talentless, the podcast that's all HR, all talent, and zero fluff. Hosted by industry talent leaders Desiree Goldie and Ashley King, and made for recruiters who think of talent outside of the box. They're here to dig into the heart of what makes workplaces tick and sometimes blow up. They are not afraid to get into the messy, the meaningful, and the downright motivating. So buckle up, because they're here to make you the best in the business. Now, let's get to work.
All right, let's get into this thing. So, hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Talentless. Today, we're talking about hiring managers and managing the manager. Hiring managers are the most unpredictable part of the process. Let me just say that. Biggest factor in whether you succeed or spiral. They ghost. They waffle. They want top talent fast, but don't want to give any input. So how do you go from being seen as a task manager to an actual partner? And we talk about this all the time on this show about being partners. So you need to manage the manager before they derail you. So let's get into it and let's start it off. Intro song. Intro song. Okay, we say this all the time, but your role as a recruiter does not live in a vacuum. It lives inside someone else's job description. That means all the nuggets are there. You just need to be able to pull them out, right? And that means how well you navigate a hiring manager is how successful you're going to be at filling that role. And I believe that wholeheartedly. Because I think no one teaches recruiters how to lead up. I think they are manage up. I think we struggle with this, and this is why we get seen sometimes as an order taker, and we shouldn't be that. So I'm now going to let Ashley talk about the topic. You can see I'm so energized.
I was about to say, don't get too damn excited about this, okay? Like, you just sound thrilled to be at the ball.
I am here.
We did already tell them it's Monday, so they're aware.
They are aware.
They know what the situation is.
They totally are.
Just buckle up.
Buckle up.
We're still humans. No, but actually and honestly. So today, what we are talking about is managing the manager, which is essentially the philosophy of the fact that you cannot facilitate your job well unless you know how to be a thoughtful, strategic partner. And the number one partnership that you are going to have in this role of recruitment is with your hiring managers. And so you really can't do this job very well unless you are able to operate with the people who hold the hiring making decision. Because as recruiters, we never own outcomes. We only own influence. I do not get to actually make the full decision. I only get to influence the people that do. And a lot of that impacts what we do day to day. So this episode specifically breaks down the truth every recruiter eventually learns. Managing the manager and working with them is a job. It's not just a partnership. You are a guide. You're a translator. You're sometimes even a therapist. The faster you learn to build trust and communicate expectations and influence bias, the better your hires are going to be and the more respect you're going to earn and really be able to operate with within the business.
I can't tell you how many times I've been a therapist for hiring managers. I mean,
what?
I mean, I can't even count the number of times, even though they don't realize they're on the couch. They are.
Right?
Right?
And I mean, but can I tell you something? That's actually point, like the biggest point of it all is like building trust. And you can't have someone come sit on your invisible therapy couch if they don't trust you. Honestly, in a weird way, knowing that your managers are coming to you, trusting you with this information, telling you all the things that they need changed, means that one, they perceive you to have the power to be able to do it. They trust you with the information and they now have hopes of an impact that can come from you. That's the whole point of the exchange. So in a weird way, Desiree, you mentioning the therapy couch is actually point number one of this whole kit and caboodle, and that is understanding our place in the relationship and building trust with the managers. I am a SME, but I'm an extension of the manager. I am someone who helps to enable whatever it is that they need to do in order to hire. Our partnership is interesting. Like I said, I'm the influence, not the outcomes. And so what that means is that sometimes you can work with managers that have a little bit of the Dunning-Kruger effect.
Yeah.
For everybody in the room, Dunning-Kruger in this scenario is the idea that because you've dabbled in it a little bit, you understand it completely. So one example might be the feeling I think all men have whenever they see Simone Biles go do gymnast flips and tricks. And they see it and they're like, I could do a flip. I could do that. And then because they've seen it, they think they understand it, but then they try it and it just all falls apart. And maybe this isn't just men. I think it's women too. But specifically, they did try. They had like the male athletes try to do what Simone Biles did in her last Olympic run. And every time I think of Dunning-Kruger, I think of that. Like once you watch it, you're like, I could totally do this little back bend. And then you just try to get your body in the position. And it's like, no, that was not what I thought it is. And the reason that this happens so much with our hiring managers versus any other relationship that we have is because hiring is a bullet point on their job description. Yeah. So their belief, because they are able to make the outcome of the decision, is that they understand it all. They comprehend what you do day to day. They could do it if for any reason their current role failed. When all fails, go recruit for the job that you couldn't do, right? And so there is a little bit of that there, but our job is to not just be a bullet point on their job description. Our job is to be an enlightened advisor. We need to be strategic partners. And there is something to be said about because we are a bullet point on their job description, sometimes there is a lack of reverence for what we do, the strategy that we hold, the impact that we make. And so how do we, with all of these preconceived notions, all of these things wrapped in, build trust, build a partnership, and build something that lasts to be able to make strategic impact? And so I think the question is like, how do you build trust? And more importantly, how do you define it? For me specifically, if I trust you it means I trust your baseline competency on the topic. I trust your work ethic, your discretion, your professionalism. For me, one of the big things that I will say breaks trust is a reliable or an unreliable narrator.
Yeah.
So if my recruiters are telling me, oh, this XYZ, and then the data says different, or, oh, this, and then managers say different, I will say the easiest way to break trust or to find trust is finding your reliable narrators who time after time say it right on every spot, and then also the unreliable narrators who maybe have a little bit of flaws in their concept and kind of how they go about certain things.
Yeah, you know, I want to go back to something you said, because I think this is the part that people struggle with, is the SME part, like setting yourself up as a SME, right? Because most hiring managers think we sit there and throw resumes at them and we don't know anything about what they're doing. So how could we qualify somebody for a job and all of those things? I think that, you know, we really need to set ourselves up as a subject matter expert. That means talking in real talk to them in their language, right? Yep. And I think we don't do that. We're like, well, here's the pipeline. We need to really do our job and do research and talk about those things, you know, at intake. We need to really, really spend some time delving into it. So when we go into those intake calls, we are establishing that we're a SME. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think a lot of recruiters do that. Like, here's the job description, you know, and I'm not saying all, because there's some great recruiters out there. People don't write comments about how I hate all recruiters. I am one.
That was the first comment they were going to write.
Right, yeah, yeah.
They're like, you know, the woman who does the whole podcast to help all the recruiters, all she does is hate recruiters.
I know. It's not that I hate them. I think we just need to be better. Right?
Has anyone ever said that?
Oh, I'm sure. Bye. They have. In their minds, maybe not in the comments, but definitely in their minds. But I don't. I think we need to be better at being the partner. And I think we need to be better at being the SME. And it takes time to develop that for all you junior recruiters. You'll get better at it. But, you know, I think trust is so important. And like, I trust my plumber because I know he's come to me and talked about things that I wouldn't have identified as a problem, right? So I put trust in that plumber to be able to fix something. It's the same thing in theory with recruiting. I need you to fix this problem, which is I need to hire someone. Tell me how you're going to get there, right? Tell me why you're qualified to do this as a job. And then let's form the partnership to get there, right? Am I right?
Yeah. No, you absolutely are. And that's kind of a piece of what we created is we found, so what you described is a type of tendency that you like for one, learning, but also for relationships. So we created hiring manager love languages, which are basically like, what is the vehicle that they like to drive in to really build in trust? Like, what is the best way for me to get to point A and point B, knowing what we know about their road and their journey? And so for some people, that is their love language is having a recruiter that's a teacher, having someone that can be like, oh, well, for this industry and this space, I would actually say XYZ. And whenever you think of the candidate persona, maybe we should be doing this and we should have that, and saying things that they've never heard before because they've thought of it not only outside of the box, but in a few different contexts. And they like knowing those different items. They like knowing the different routes that you can go about, so much so that they enjoy teaching others. And so that's actually one of the routes, like I said, that we use to build trust with managers is teaching. Another one, listening. Some managers don't want you. Yeah. Sometimes they don't actually need you to fix anything.
Right.
They just need you to say like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry that that's what you've been doing this whole time. That's not what we're going to do. You're not going to have to go through every single resume. That should not have been happening. And my job isn't to fix anything, because our standard was always going to be to review every resume, not the manager. But my job is just to listen, to give this unconditional compassion and empathy of like, I'm sorry you've been taking that on, and I'm pumped to take it off of you. I'm pumped that you don't have to anymore.
And this goes back to the couch thing. I'm going to go back to the therapy couch.
Yeah.
Right? When you go to your therapist, by the way, everybody, I have one. When you go, when you go to therapy, a lot of them is them listening to me.
Yeah.
Right? They're not providing all the answers. They're just giving and listening and saying and listening with compassion and empathy. And then saying, here's some things to think about as you take the next step in this journey. And so I ultimately say that, like, you need to be somewhat of a therapist and put that hiring manager on the couch. And if that is listening or teaching or whatever the next thing is, you need to assess quickly what type of manager you're working with. Right. Yeah. And then say, okay, this is how to tackle this manager. And so, I love that. I love the scenario of like building the teaching moment, but also the listening moment. Because, you know, anybody who's ever read my content knows I think listening is a truly undeveloped skill. And recruiters, to me, need to be some of the best at it.
The best. Picking up on cues, clicking in on words, because it's how we should be asking our questions. Right. Which is actually, so at the labs, we have like almost 10 different manager love languages. So you and I have talked about too, the teacher, the listener. And so one of them we call is the curious cat. And that is a manager who loves being asked inquisitive questions. That is someone who has done the teaching of like helping them understand all of the context, everything like that, has been listening to the words that they say and actually thoughtfully processing to where their next step is asking these curated, extremely thoughtful questions that the managers have never been asked before that make them think about it a little bit differently and that add context that hasn't been in our bucket quite yet. And it changes the way that we look at it. So although these are love languages, which we find, again, certain managers like more certain things than others. Some managers are like, I swear to God, if you ask me one more question, I am going to find someone else and hire them just to answer your questions because I can't fire you because you've only been here one day. Like, that's why I say there's like so many because one doesn't always work for the other. But I used to have one, I will say engineers love the teaching and the inquisitive, that if that CTO came with me with something and I didn't follow up with five questions, he was like, she wasn't listening. Right. There wasn't. And like they just felt like it fell flat for them. And it didn't matter who the audience was. The lack of engagement is what spoke the volumes. So whenever you're trying to build trust, and the number one thing for trust is this, at least my example was, I need to understand that you know the baseline competency of this. Right. And you ask no questions either means that I am the best person at explaining in the whole entire world, which is not accurate, or you understand absolutely everything, maybe, or we didn't have engagement, or maybe you're shy, or maybe this or that. There's 50 different reasons, but for whatever reason it may be, we need to get in there and we need to, you know, get a little bit more strategic with that.
Right. You know, I encourage everyone, you know, I've had to do this before after meeting a hiring manager, is really sit down and say, did I engage with that person? Do an audit of what just happened, because I have had incidents where I have like a very overbearing hiring manager and he's like running the entire conversation and I don't get to interject and like, you know, all of those things. And then I do an audit and then I do a follow-up. Let's say, great conversation today, but here's the 52 questions I didn't get to ask. And that is also a great part of that relationship and still builds trust, even though I never got to say a single word in our meeting. So I think identifying who you're working with and figuring out those tactics to follow up or do all of those things. I really encourage people to do an audit of those relationships because it'll get you further along the line way quicker for that 5 minutes to 10 minutes you spent doing that quick audit.
Yeah. And here's the thing that I think people miss. The time's passing anyway. Your time with this manager, the amount of time you're putting in their emails, the amount of time that you're in Teams or in Slack or on meetings with them, all of this is happening anyway. The only thing that changes is we just add a question. Or maybe instead of adding a solution at the end, we just say, that is really, really tough. Like, are you okay getting through? Like, how's it going? Like, just leaving it blank open, not needing to be their savior. They're perfectly capable and feel that they are. They lack no solution. They just need time and maybe support. And so by giving them that and not just assuming, well, maybe you don't know and there's a solution I can give you just right off the bat.
Right.
So being attentive to these items, it really speaks a lot because that's how you build the trust that you're going to need in order to shape the proper influence that you really want.
Yeah, and I think this also gets into the next thing we were going to talk about, and that's a little bit about process. You know, and you know, if you're at a smaller company, there may not be an existing process of how you work with these hiring managers. You may have to develop that process, that intake, that whatever is going to be the structure. You may need to build it, but I think having it, and you know, I'm a planner and a process person.
No.
But no.
Desiree Goldie? Process?
Not at all.
I've never heard either of those. Yeah.
Not at all. But yeah, you know, I think having a set process and really helps, you know, guide them and guide you and how that relationship will go, right? Because managers, I've had so many hiring managers think I can read their minds automatically. They're like, yes, I thought you knew that. I thought, and I'm like, what are you talking about? We never even talked about that.
You
right?
don't even know my name and you thought I knew that.
Like, right.
We just met today.
What is my name? What's my full name?
Literal name.
What is my literal name, right?
Like, okay.
But having that process also builds that trust because it shows you how to drive the car, if that makes any sense. And if we have no process and we're like, and they ask you, so what's the next steps? And you're like, I don't know, I'm going to send you some resumes and you're going to look through them and hopefully you'll get back to me someone you like. It doesn't work. It doesn't build that trust as that hiring manager seeing you as someone that can drive the seat and get them to goal.
Yeah. And not only that, but also the fact that they're so nonchalant and they're so not energized. And so there was a manager that I worked with years ago that anytime if he got off the phone with someone that was an energy sucker, like, oh, good Lord. Geez. Like, if this person did not give them energy, we couldn't hire them. But to be honest, I hated the feedback, but the feedback wasn't wrong.
Right.
There's something to be said about people who are draining and who are not. And so even whenever we go back to this idea of how we build trust with someone is, like I said, I am looking for this form of baseline competency, some connection where we have a wavelength where I'm like, you get it, I get it, we're all on the same. Thus, we build trust, whatever that may be. And so, like, if we as the professionals aren't meeting them at that threshold, how dare we expect for them to meet us on any wavelength if we're not also saying, hey, we meet the baseline competency of what you're seeking? Like, what trash are we? So I will say, don't, like, expect what you can't put out. So that's, you know.
Yeah, because that's what a partnership is, right? It's meeting together, you know, at the same level and getting the goal. I honestly think if you set yourself up where you're below that competency level or you're not meeting the need of a hiring manager, that partnership is already on a rocky road. We've already gone down a path that is going to take us longer to fill that role. We're going to go back and forth and back and forth on what the actual persona looks like. It's just going to be a longer search, a harder search for you. And it's just not productive in the end, right?
Yeah.
So you need to, you know, I know we say buckle up a lot on this show, but buckle up and get your big girl panties on or big boy panties on and right underwear on and really like set up a process, set up a structure, set up something that is going to get you to true trust and true partnership in the end.
Also, to be inclusive, if you are commando, you are welcome as well.
Oh my gosh. Yes, please do that. Please do that, but don't tell me. Thank you very much.
I don't care if you do tell us. We welcome everyone, actually. Hear us out, all right? Anyway, we're going to move past the undergarments.
Yes.
This episode is brought to you by DEI Labs, re-educating corporate America with immersive, data-driven DEI training for HR and hiring pros. Ready to shift systems and spark real change? Visit DEI-labs.com to get started. Need a resume that actually works? Resume Writing is a female-owned team of recruiting pros helping job seekers land the roles they deserve. Get expert help at resumewriting.com.
Please, let's move past that.
But,
Thank you very much.
But you do make a few good points in the sense of, like, I know one thing that we kind of talk about a bit is whenever you have that trust and partnership, like how you'll do handoffs, like right. that stuff matters. How like all these different intricacies in the process make a difference. And I think what's important is for people to understand is every single one of these is an opportunity to build trust. And every single one of these is moving whether you want to or not. And I think the best way to think about this, I actually saw this the other day, but it was about something else, is this idea of like three choices, two outcomes. Mm. And so it's kind of this idea of like the ball's moving this way and here's the end of the desk and it is going to fall off. So we have three options. We can either stop it, which means the outcome means it pushes back a little. We can move it forward and help it go forward, which means it goes right there. Or we can do absolutely nothing and it's falling off anyway. So these are three actions we can take. Do something, do nothing, make it worse. But there's still only two outcomes.
Right.
So unless you're actively intentional on pushing back, we will always be going this way.
Right.
And so that's why, because we're about to probably lean into a little bit of like, how do we use biases in social psychology mm-hmm. and emotional intelligence to actually assist us with influence? Because again, when it comes to hiring managers making decisions, it is happening anyway. So we have three choices, two outcomes, every single time, hired or not. And we kind of influence exactly that path, the speed and the rate that it goes at.
Yeah, I mean, this part for me is everything. Like talent, influence, and persuasion, right? Mm-hmm. Like this to me is where it's at, right? You know, and it happens in social media all the time, right? Because your perception of what somebody is on social media may not be the truth. And that, and so the influence and persuasion you have after, let's say someone contacts you on social, off of social media, and you have that conversation, then I know you actually meet that social media persona that you have, right?
Yep.
And so influence and persuasion to me influences all of that. And so when we talk about hiring managers and equating it to that, the way you approach, the way you do the work, to me, influences people the most. Not what you say you're going to do. It's like how you do it and how you are able to prove that you can do it. And I live by that, right?
Yeah.
I truly live by that when I'm recruiting for clients every single day. I could talk a good game when I'm interviewing with them to do some work and say all these wonderful things about how great I am as a recruiter. But and that's great. You know, they can look at my LinkedIn. They're like, oh my gosh, she's awesome. But as we start that relationship, fully persuading them to my side that I actually know what I'm talking about is huge. It's huge. It builds trust. You know, they kind of leave me alone. Let me do my job. They're not trying to micromanage the process. I just, all of it lives for me right here.
Yeah. And that's kind of like a data point of success, right? Is like, do they give you autonomy? Do they trust you? Or are they giving you autonomy because they don't trust you at all? They don't think you're going to do it. So they've already gone another way.
Right.
And are you emotionally intelligent enough to pick apart which is which?
Yes.
All of these things make a big difference on how the relationship goes, on how you're able to influence the process, the manager, the outcomes, if you're able to do any persuasion there at all.
Yeah.
And so that's something, because what's interesting to me about recruiters is, one thing I think people don't understand is biases. Bias has a really negative connotation because 99% of times that people are talking about biases, they're talking about the negative ones. They're talking about the ones that bring about prejudice. They're talking about the ones that, you know, bring about more social constructs and issues.
Yes.
What people don't know is that the term bias in general is literally, it means like a mental shortcut.
Right.
So you can have a bias towards, so for instance, whenever they talk about facial recognition and association, whenever you look at the Harvard IAT and they talk about faces, it's easier for us to automatically assimilate to those who look like us and are from our community. And it happens automatic. Some of this is a survival mechanism because it's what we used to use. It's how we know if we're safe in a room. Do I see other women or are these all just men? And this is all happening on an automatic level, boom, 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 firing off at all times. And so I think we need to understand that biases always, mental shortcuts always are happening with or without your consent. Yeah. Like, we need to know that. And the difference is a lot of the motivation, I guess we could say, around our biases are should be survival instinct brought. So a lot of them should be that navigation of, am I surviving? Am I in a safe space? And then it goes from there to status of like, okay, who's the hierarchy in the room? Where do I fit? How should I flow? And how should I behave? These are like the psychological things that we go through in a minute. And it's what helps us navigate the room. And so what I wish recruiters knew more about is there are ways to positively create biases, create positive influence shortcuts that maybe they didn't have before. And you can even take bad shortcuts that do produce prejudice, that do produce attitudes, behaviors that are negative, and actually retrain them to become positive impactors. That retraining, that road that they're on, this is called an availability heuristic. We're not going to get in here deep because I can already see your face.
I know.
But I do want to explain that what you have available to you, how you get your news, how you listen to music, what movies that you watch, this shapes that road, what we just called an availability heuristic. It shapes the whole thing. And so if you're working with your managers and all they know, the only road that they have had shaped is some rinky-dink recruiter who tossed resumes at them, never sourced a thing at them, then the only information that they have available to shape their bias is, I have to do 100%. If it's not me, then no one else is doing it. I am the best hire. So remember in the beginning, whenever we talked about the bullet point and how they may think they can do it all because they had to do one thing at one point, they also might have some scar tissue there too,
right?
To say that there's reason that they believe that.
Right.
So when you get to these points, when you see that your managers have biases, if the bias is, I don't like to work with recruiters, then you need to look at that road. I'm not going to say the proper term, even though I hope by the third time I would say it, availability heuristic, you would all look it up and see what it is and how you can change or shape your biases. Anyway, but the point is that, I mean, it's really...
It's such a joy to do this show with you.
It's the most important part of life. Anyway, it's not the point. It is the point, but it's not the point. Everyone, it's so the point. Oh my God. Okay. We're moving past it, though. So they need to look at the way the road is shaped. They need to look at why. Because odds are the biases that you're seeing, the behaviors, the attitudes, the values are not actually even a reflection of you. They're a reflection of that road. So anyway, we're going to move past this because actually...
It's a really good point because I think that there have been some really bad relationships with recruiters for tons of hiring managers.
Yeah.
And this is because, you know, And this is, you know, my own personal opinion, but, you know, talent leaders aren't always training their recruiters in the best way. Companies aren't developing them in the best way. We're still using a lot of old, outdated ways to do work. And so, and now with the development of ATSs and all these things, our job may seem easier. Of course, it's not. Everybody knows that. But, you know, we'll do that on another episode.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think... You know, hiring managers do believe that we should be better at our jobs. We should, but they have so much scar tissue that they come to these intake meetings and they're like, what a complete waste of my time this is going to be, right?
And to date, to their point, not to interrupt you, they're right.
Oh,
they're
right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I manage recruiters and I have seen some intake calls where I get off and I'm like, what did you just do? Like, you didn't answer, you didn't really fully ask any questions. You didn't really go into the skill sets needed. You really didn't look at what that team, how that team functions, how all of the nuances of that actual role need me to be able to fill that job successfully. And I think we're just not investing the time to teach. This can go for the gamut. I'm going to say junior recruiters, but all the way through how to do these proper intakes, how to work with the hiring manager, how to develop that partnership. We need to be doing more leading and coaching of that, right? If I could hire a recruiter coach for every organization, I would. I know, Ashley, you are one.
I was the first. Can we jot that down in history? Wait. Put that on the podcast history copyright. It was 2021, and I remember handing my guy a business card, and he's like, so wait, you're a recruiter coach? And then I was like, Yeah. And then he's like, I've never even heard of that before. And guess what, Jack? It's because they didn't exist. I was the first one. And so he, God bless him, don't know who he was or where he was. We were just in line at the minibar. But the point is that he lit the fire of like, yes, they need training and enablement. Yes. This is the group that is holding the money clip for everyone that lives in the U.S. If anyone needs to be trained besides surgeons, it's them. Yeah. And so my thing is, if like all of us are stratified based off of what their intel says and how well they do it and who they bring to the table.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I'm telling you.
I'm telling you.
And there are roles out there. Oh, I see them now more than I've ever seen them before for, you know, training recruiters and how do you develop a recruiting team and, you know, really being a leader. And we need to be doing more of that.
Yeah.
And we definitely need to be doing more of that because it teaches things like bias and it teaches things like intake. It teaches things like how do you develop strong interview questions during screens. It teaches recruiters how to do all of those things they may not even know. That's why we have that section, which we'll get to soon, called Talent Outside the Box, where we teach people about the psychological side of this work. Right. Yeah. And how it affects people, because I don't think people know this. No, I don't think they're out here thinking about why people do the things they do, why recruiters work the way they work, why hiring managers have scar tissue. No one's talking about that enough. And so we walk into these relationships with hiring managers and it's almost doomed from the start. Right. A recruiter takes hold and works to fix and mold that relationship, you are done for. You need to manage the manager. And I can't say that enough because yes, they're great at their role, CTO, head of engineering, head of marketing, whatever they are, that's what they're good at. They are not good at recruiting.
Right? Yeah. Well, and it's not their main squeeze.
Right.
It's not,
no. It shouldn't be meant to be.
Unless they want it, but I don't think so.
They would have been a recruiter then.
Yeah. Right? They didn't want the pay cut.
They didn't want to get laid off every two years.
They didn't want the pay cut. Yeah, laid off every 2 years.
Years,
boom, big fail, whatever. Right. All goes round. They didn't want to be replaced by AI. Yeah, you know, whatever. Whatever it is this week.
And they didn't want everybody to hate them. So I think that those are things we need to be focusing on as an industry more, is how do we train recruiters to be a partner? But all of those things are so, so important. And we need to be doing a better job at leading our teams of how to do this work. Because this is probably, to me, building pipeline, you know, I hate sourcing, is building pipeline. Some of this is just intuitive. What's non-intuitive is how you get to the point where actually doing those things, right? How are you sourcing? How are you managing the manager? How are you doing an intake call? And we're just not developing people or training people in the right way to get to that point. And I hope that we do better in the future, but I don't think we're anywhere close to doing it well now.
No, I don't think so either. I think the social intangibles have always been the skill set that everyone in professional world has always, or any world, truly, has lacked the most.
Yeah.
I will say, and this is not meant for this to be an ad, but essentially, just so the world knows who's listening, we built DEI Labs as a company to be basically recruiting trainers, talent trainers is essentially what it is. It was called DEI Labs because the specific focal point was the fact that talent was doing so bad with DEI execution. Because they were just like, I just look at pictures. I just do this. And it was such a darn to learn mess that kind of became the focal point. And to be honest, it wasn't a bad gig because it meant we could concentrate on all of those biases. We could bring out all of the information, all of those availability heuristics that shaped our road. How do we
That analyze... was number six, people. She said it six
Girl,
times.
Don't make me. I will sand Sally at the Scooby suit or whatever those sayings are. Peter Piper pecked. I will get crazy with an availability heuristic. Don't tempt me.
I love it.
But looking into how are our roads shaped and how has that shaped road actually impacted how I help and influence hiring?
Right.
And what are those down the river, like impacts? Like, what does that actually mean later on?
Yeah.
In the macro of world. So I will say that what we're talking about is not only a passion, it's like I wanted to make it a business because it mattered that bloody much. And so now, essentially, that DEI Labs has consulted for all these different businesses, we're compiling every single thing that we've learned from all of these places, best practices, worst practices, things that we're seeing are absolutely common trends, things, talking points of how you need to get with managers and go over certain things. And whenever there's intra-team issues on the manager hiring side, not ours, which is 9 times out of 10, sometimes. But anyway, the point is this, is that all of those findings, that's what Talent Ed is. So it's a consolidated everything into a book and sell it, and it's Talent Ed Recruiter University. And so the idea is that all of the learnings that we've made, everything like that, you can now buy as an individual recruiter, so you can learn these things. So you can have a proper intake form that covers 1,000% of your bases, no matter where you're working, what you're doing, but can be pulled apart enough to be customized to also whatever you want to do at whatever role you're
at. I mean, whoever's not buying, if you're listening, go buy it. Right now.
I mean, well, we're still copyright phase.
But when it comes out, seriously, this is not just a plug for it, but honestly,
it really isn't.
This is really, truly how we should be thinking about training our teams. And if you, even if you don't go buy this when it comes out, I think you should be thinking this way as a leader of people who do recruiting. And recruiting teams and leading recruiting teams. And also as a recruiter, if your leadership isn't going to give it to you, go find it, right? Is what I always say.
And that is essentially, so here's what happened. DEI Labs was a B2B. So that means only other brands or logos could purchase us. And we would have recruiters that worked at maybe like a 500 office, but they're the only recruiter. And so they don't have a budget or a team or a this or a that. So what solutions can we have for them? And to be honest, for the most part, whenever they asked us for help, we just helped.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean come to me for free labor, people, but it does mean that in the past, it's especially if they were eager, like, hey, you're one person. What's the deal? Let me help. But it is the solution for the consumer, for the individual recruiter that maybe his company can't afford or they can't afford to go get a master's degree in IO psychology. How can we finally democratize this information that has been kept in a JSTOR ivory white tower of peer-reviewed articles? And how do we actually break it down to a digestible amount, make it specifically applicable for talent and recruitment, but scalable for any industry and role? And essentially, that's what this is. It is giving you all of the logic, motivation, strategy, and social algorithms that you need to complete this work, but enough open-ended to where you're actually learning it and how to apply it in real time in the field versus it just being a knowledge book that sits on your desk and it collects dust.
I do love this. And I think that if we could be doing more of this, we probably wouldn't even have a podcast because people would be doing it, right? But that's not the truth today as we sit in talent and the talent industry. It's not, there's so much room for improvement. And I don't want anyone to think that we're saying everyone is bad at their jobs or everyone doesn't know how to manage the manager. I think there's just things that we could be doing more effectively to stop being seen as something that's just costing the organization money. And it's because I talk about this all the time, and I've been on shows talking about how we are seen as just something that costs money. And it's the reason talent acquisition is getting laid off first. It's the reason it's literally checking a box and like saying, where do we lay off? Let's go straight to talent. Because we don't generate revenue, but in actuality, we do. Just like if you link all the things.
Check it. One of the chapters in the book is from cost to profit.
There we go.
Going from a cost center to a profit center and how you can actually do it in talent.
Right. And this is the thing. If we could move that way, if we could become more of a strategic partner and more of a profit center, we would be seen. I believe we would stop getting laid off as much and also maybe be more productive teams. So I've seen us struggle, and especially in the high volume world, struggle with recs and struggle with all of the things that the overload, the smaller teams, all of it. If we were more productive and more effective in the work, I think we would get to the finish line a lot faster. And when it comes to hiring you know, managing the manager, I'm sure there's tons of tips and tricks in the book and actual logic to how you do this. But I cannot stress enough, if you get off this podcast and you're like, I've been doing it right, I know what I'm doing, I want you to write down exactly what the steps are you take with your hiring manager and then evaluate whether that's a partnership or you're an order taker. Because I bet you most of you will end up with that, I end up being an order taker. I've had to do it myself, people. I'm telling you, it's an exercise you should all participate in.
Yeah. You don't want to get in the habit of being a go fetch 'em girl.
Oh, my gosh.
And sometimes that's what happens.
Yeah.
I will say, and you know when it happens, if you're not willing to speak back up to your manager and tell them whenever they're being ridiculous, then you're a go get me. You're a go fetch 'em girl.
Yeah.
If that's all. That's literally how you know, because you don't have to go fetch what you tell a manager you don't need.
Yeah.
And so if it's something to where they're trying to pull, like, the only way I can get quality is if I have quantity, if you're too scared to say them, those don't equal the same thing, and actually, no, I'll be tailoring this and that, then hey, you're a go fetch them. What are the other signs? Like,
right.
They're like 50.
There's tons.
You can evaluate for yourself to be like, am I who I think I am in this space? Again, the bias of checking out our statuses of where we are. These will help you determine and help you self-regulate and self-manage with your social awareness as well.
Yeah. And you know what? I think we didn't touch on this as much, but developing the skill set of pushback is a huge one. And not everybody is great at doing it or comfortable doing it. But if you can develop that as a skill set, that you speak up when things just don't make sense or aren't right, or you know better, that's also establishing trust, also establishing yourself as a SME, because you have the willingness to say, pause, this doesn't make sense. This isn't true. This isn't right. Let's go, but let's start over. Or here's the answer of what is right. That is going to get you to that partnership level. And I am, for all of you that know me out there, and for those of you that listen to the show, I'm kind of feisty. So I don't have a problem with pushback, but I know so many recruiters
this
do.
This angel baby? This sweet little dumpling?
Yeah, that's me.
No, she's so quiet. She would never.
I would never. No, my mouth is horrible.
No. So one thing that I will say, and here's my thoughts on all of trust and everything within it. Everything's about branding, all of it. So if my thing is, a lot of people starts getting hairy whenever we start needing to take accountability. Whenever I need you to take it, whenever I need me to take it, whenever we need to talk about the hard stuff, is whenever it starts getting wishy-washy.
Yeah.
Here's what I want to encourage you to do. I actually want to encourage you to be the steady force that says, hey, this conversation is not for us to actually get spicy. This conversation is because you and I both have the same goal, and I really want us to walk out of here getting it. And this is me displaying effort. And my specific effort is care. And that's what all of this is. Being transparent is care. Making someone and holding them accountable is care. Getting uncomfortable and having hard conversations for the sake of their growth because someone else may not be willing to tell them, that's care. Like, to me, all the things that have been packaged as, she's going to be such a crap boss, she holds me accountable, and she tells me every detail, and blah, blah, blah. Those are also, if repackaged correctly, are the same things that say, I'm actually telling you this because I actually give a damn. I want you to know your zipper's undone because I don't want you walking out there. That's what care is.
Yeah.
And to some people, when they receive it, it falls on them like insult versus me going out of my comfort zone to say, hey, I see what's happening and I actually want to see you succeed. If that is your goal, can I tell you what's happening here that's being the disconnect? Like, that takes cojones. That takes space and time and trust that once I tell them, hey, you know, blah, de, blah, that they're not going to just turn around and smack me in the face too, right?
Yeah.
Like, it takes trust that I trust the audience that I can tell you this information. And maybe you don't think it's care right now, but if I let you sit with it long enough, you will. Because there's some people that their zipper may be undone, but no matter how many times you try to brand that action, they will always be like, they just hate me.
Yeah.
They don't want. And those are the people, and they'll reveal themselves rather quick, but those are the ones who can't get past care if it is rebranded, that they're not going to make the cut. They're not going to make it onto the next round. They're not going to be able to last with whatever it is that comes next down the pipe as a recruiter, because all of our other recruiters will outshine them. The moment they know what to fix, they know what to tweak, they know what to move, those are the ones that will excel and will have all of the manager's trust, and the other ones will fall behind. And it's because they can't get past themselves. They can't get past themselves being the center of, well, if someone's telling me my zipper's undone, it's because they have something against me, not because your zipper's actually undone.
Yeah, same thing. I mean, attitude in recruiting is so huge.
Oh, it's massive.
It's massive, right? All right, folks, this is the part of the show, and if you've been rocking it with us since the beginning of Talentless, you know this is the one we called the part of the episode and segment that we call You Didn't Know Before, but we're leveling it up. This part of the show is now called Talent Outside of the Box. Because that's exactly what it is. This is where we zoom out from the daily chaos and talk about the psychological side of the topic we've been talking about. It's the wiring behind the work, right? So in the spirit of getting deeper and getting smarter, I'm turning it over to Ashley.
Everyone, I may have messed up a little bit and got too close to the sun with our talent outside of the box and told y'all some of the things. I let the talent outside of the box and out of the bag. And so this might be a little similar to what you just heard in this episode, but we're going to let it roll because now it counts. Today's talent outside of the box is about biases. What are they? Why do we have them? And what do they mean? Similar to what I said earlier, your bias is a mental shortcut. It is a way that your synapses in your brain connects. It connects A to C without needing to go through B. Essentially, that is what a bias is. It's a mental shortcut. And we all have them. Now, depending on your availability heuristic will determine the road that shapes the route of your biases. So again, your availability heuristic is like, for instance, if we take in, and we all know this to be different, if I watch news on one channel versus another channel, what I'm taking in is very different. And those take-ins are what are shaping my road. And this happens with all stimulus that we receive within all five of our senses. So that could be our eyesight, smell, nose, taste. We're taking all of this in and it's creating our route of biases the absolute whole time. Creating influence is essentially providing an off-ramp to their current roads and routes. So because the bias will still exist, what we really need is change management rather than, just going with that same bias. So what do? We change it from a bias that is negative to the positive. So what would be considered a negative bias? One could be, I hire diversity, but I don't want a lack of quality. We've all heard that. That's a negative bias. Outcome is they want to hire individuals from different backgrounds, but in their terminology, because they used called human a diversity, first of all, that's not term, but then also that they don't want a lack of quality, that they synonymously associate it with that. That's a negative bias. It has a negative impact and connotation. A positive bias would have been, I will hire diversity, same first beginning of the sentence, because I truly value different opinions, perspectives, and experiences. That's a positive bias. They both take us to the same shortcut. We're both going to the same place and hiring people from different communities. However, one manager has a positive outlook on this to where it will impact the retention, attrition, and experience of these hires. And then we have a negative manager who has automatic negative connotations just in the way that they have worded their sentence and communicated to you without prompt. And so this is how you would deduce different biases of different people. Same endpoint, same movements, different biases. The best way that you can help as a recruiter is to help their routes, give them off ramps, help them understand that diversity has value, whatever it takes to teach them, and then upgrade their problems based on upgrading their biases. That's today's Talent Outside of the Box.
Awesome. That was a great one for me. I always learn something, by the way, people on those. So I have to read it before and I'm like, oh yeah, that's what I do. So those are great. They're always at the end of our episode and check them out. They're really, really intelligent. And of course, that's why we have Ashley on the show, to be intelligent. So
that's the only reason.
That's the only reason.
It ain't her looks. It ain't her face for radio.
All right, folks, that's it for today on the Recruiting Talent and HR Roller Coaster. Want more? Hit us up wherever you listen to your podcast or on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Blue Sky. Oh my gosh, just everywhere. We're usually talentless podcasts, except for TikTok. We are talentless. New episodes drop almost every week. We are actually just coming back from a break, but we're back on schedule. So from hiring fails to hiring wins, see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm Desiree.
And I'm Ashley. And thanks for listening to Talentless, where we keep it real in the world of HR.
If you loved what you heard, don't forget to hit subscribe and give us a follow on Blue Sky, Instagram, and LinkedIn. We're here to keep your feed packed with everything you need to level up in recruitment and HR.
And be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
And hey, don't miss out. Sign up for our newsletter for fresh insights and follow us on socials to stay connected with both Ashley and me.
Thanks again for joining us on Talentless. Until next time, we'll see you then.